This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Good to be with you. Our Democrat of the day, and I'm kind of hoping on this one, is going to be Sandra Feist. She is a representative there. We'll hopefully talk to her at 5:30. She's in a House session there, so we're kind of hoping things open up. We'll have to see, but needless to say, I'll get Sandra on. Let's get feisty. That's what I have to say. Let's get feisty. Patrick is here with us. How are you today, Patrick?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you doing?
I'm broken to the core, if I can be honest. They've announced the snowplow names. And we did pretty good as far as guessing which ones were going to win. But some of the ones I thought were slam dunks did not make it. Now, it's not a big surprise. Betty Whiteout was the absolute winner. And the... It was almost got twice as many votes as the second place one. So, I mean, that was a given. And we said, were you here that day when we were talking about the plow names?
I think we have a little bit, yes.
Yeah. That was the no-brainer. That, of course, was going to make it there. Here are the rest of the names that made the eight other names. I am shocked by this one. This was the second highest one. Control, Salt, Delete.
I got to admit, that was my favorite one.
You did like that one. All right. That was a little I did not think that would catch on, but I was wrong. I did predict the Big Leplowski was going to make it. The Big Leplowski did, name in number 3. Plowasaurus Rex. I said that I didn't like Plowasaurus Rex, but that's likely going to make it cuz dinosaurs always win. Scoop Dog did make it as well. Thank you very much. Scoop Dog will be driving around District 3. The Blizzard of Oz, District 2. No More Mr. Ice Guy, a little surprised by that one. And then Edward Blizzard Hands was the 6. Those are the top 8. Just not even 60 votes behind in 9th place was Sir Plows-a-Lot. I thought Sir Plows-a-Lot would make it. The other ones, I was shocked Lord Coldemort did not make it. Gwedin, the Ojibwe word for north wind. That was one I thought would make it, but that one came in about, 16th or so, it looks like. Thank God Mr. Plow finished way down on the list. Not very good. But I thought, where is it? I thought Thanos would do well. It didn't. That did not. And I thought the Iron Ranger would do well. The Iron Ranger, well, it does sound like a supper club on the range. Come to the Iron Ranger. We've got steaks on special on Saturday night.
I think that is the name of a pizza at Snammy's, is the Iron Ranger.
Is it there? Oh, I guarantee you. I can swear I've been. There's a steak place up north that's called the Iron Ranger. But the last place, you want to know the last one, the one that minuscule amounts of votes, All About That Snow. Oh, Sweet Carol Brine. Thank God that did not. That was the second worst. The Halloween Blizzard Avenger was third worst. Northern Express and Frosty's Demise. That was, those are the least vote getters. Once again, the top one, Betty Whiteout, her vote total was, I'm applying a gender identity to a plow, I guess. But the Betty Whiteout is 40,000 votes. They got about 1,000 votes. So Control, Salt, Delete, the second place one, 21,000. Betty Whiteout just mopped the floor with everyone else. It's almost kidding. If you get one of those that gets that high of a vote total, can they make it the permanent name? Maybe they can. Maybe Betty Whiteout will live on forever here in Minnesota. But there you go. There's your winners. I demand a recount. I demand a recount. I'll get to that here in a second. Also wanted to mention here, officials closed a highway in southwestern Minnesota after a truck spilled its load of sugar beets, with the beets then freezing to the ground and damaging vehicles. Okay, sugar beets are not small, and they're frozen solid. That's like driving right into a bunch of rocks on the road. I mean, they're big. You ever seen a sugar beet? They're big.
I don't think I've seen a sugar beet live, but I was just going to ask, what the heck's the deal with this? Because we also had the potatoes get spilled on I-94 a couple weeks ago. It's like all this. I can't remember this ever happening, and now it's twice in like 3 weeks that, oh, it was the potatoes that froze to the road on I-94, and now sugar beets, and there's like driving over rocks road.
Well, close. I mean, if I had my option, I'd rather have the potatoes than the sugar beets. I mean, and just sugar beets are more of a processed vegetable. But, you know, potatoes you can do much with. Needless to say, same problem, though. I mean, you're exactly right. Same problem. You start running over them. They start getting squashed in the road. And next thing you know, it's cars on ice, or in this case, cars on beets. According to the Swift, well, not so much, Swift County Sheriff's Office, Highway 12 on the west side of town of Murdoch, closed Wednesday night after a truck spilled a few thousand sugar beets. Hey, Carl.
Yeah?
Did you lock down the load?
I don't know. I think so. Good enough. I'm going to drive. Bye.
I'm going to guess that's something like that. A few thousand sugar beets over a mile-long stretch. This is some guy forgot. Didn't, you know, I can tell you what. They haul these things in dump trucks a lot of the times. He didn't check the gate if it was locked down. That'd be my guess. With temperatures dropping to negative 20s with wind chill, the beets became basically large rocks. According to the sheriff's office, cars attempting to drive through the spill sustained damage, you think? Oh, God. I can't even comprehend how much damage you would do by running over a large frozen sugar beet, let alone like 20 of them. At around 9 p.m., the Minnesota Department of Transportation had cleared the road. It's the second time in recent weeks. Produce, as Patrick mentioned, the second time in recent weeks, produce spill has led to road closures on January 22nd. Interstate 94 near Albertville, a truck spilled a load of potatoes, which immediately froze among frigid temperatures. This, in turn, sparked national interest in social media, the Minnesota's Frozen Potato Highway. So are you doing this just for the social media likes? Are you doing this now? Is this, we're just going to start filling, you know, anything from Minnesota? Hey, we got the fish highway! Is that what it's going to be? One Facebook user on the Swift County Sheriff's Office Facebook page noticed the trend, commenting, first potatoes, now this. Another user chimed in, thanks for not sugarcoating it. Ta-da! That's actually pretty good. I'll give you that one. 952-946-6205. Were you out there watching the Hondurans freeze last night?
I watched it on TV in my nice warm kitchen.
Yeah, there you go. That was a nice game. They should have won that game like 6-0. I think the cold was clearly affecting how they were playing, because there were times that all they had to do was take a quick shot and it was in, and like the ball was kind of deflecting off their foot left and right. The coach, did you hear the praise he gave Minnesota after that?
I did not see that.
I watched it. It was on FS1. Because like I said, I all of a sudden I was like, hey, that's right, we're freezing some Hondurans right now. So let me turn on the game. And oh gosh, who is that quality player they subbed in the second half that got the third goal?
Oh, that was Pulisic.
Pulisic, dear God, they were trying to do the post game interview. He just looked at us and says, guys, I'm getting off the field. It's freezing cold out here. And yeah, he was not happy. I mean, most of these guys actually live in warmer climes, so this was not exactly anything they'd ever been exposed to. But the coach, who was out there towards the end of the game, taking photos with the fans, just like, I can't believe this. I've never seen this before. This is cold as I'm freezing just standing on the sidelines. And these people are in the stands sitting, and they're basically full house. I couldn't believe it. He was very impressed with us and our lack of wanting to have events in warmer months. Needless to say, I think we look pretty good, actually. I want them to bring Mexico in now. I'm tired of Mexico. Mexico always has us play summer days, middle of the afternoon, as it's Azteca Stadium, isn't it, down there?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. They have us play. I mean, they always try to take the heat and use it against us. I want you – tell you what, Mexico, time for you to come play up north with the big boys here, huh? Let's have you come on off the – open that up and let's see how you do up here in Minnesota and St. Paul in a winter game.
That's kind of why I didn't really have a lot of sympathy for the people saying, that's so wrong to subject them to those conditions. And I'm like, well, they do the gamesmanship too down there.
Well, it's Canada and the United States. We have cold weather. And it's wonderful that most of you live in a tropical region. That's great. But you guys never once say, you know what? It's going to be a real hot day. We're going to hold off on this game till it cools down. No, you basically are out there and you always make us play on the hottest days and with the high humidity. And my gosh, no. You're getting a little taste of your own medicine and you just don't like it. I remember a few years ago, there was a U.S. game in Colorado and it was snowing. I think it was El Salvador. And they were just furious that they wouldn't call the game. It's like, you play in rain, right? Well, this is kind of like rain, only it's frozen. Get out there and play. But they were furious that they made them play in those conditions. And I'm like, no. I would make sure that Minneapolis-St. Paul is a regular winter stop for these teams. And bring them up here and make them play in this. If you're going to make us play in the summer heat, well, then you got to play in the winter cold. Because I can tell you right now, Honduras, they don't want anything to do with coming back up to St. Paul ever again. So I want Mexico up here. I would like to have Mexico play. I want to see Mexico play. I guarantee the game will be a little bit better. I mean, Honduras looked horrible. And I mean, how much do you, like, you watch that game too. How much do you think that was just Honduras just saying, okay, I can't deal with the cold towards the end?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking because the U.S. was just running right by them.
Oh, they were. It sounds like two of the players had to be taken off the field because it was extreme cold. And then the thing which was interesting, did you see they didn't put any extra time on the game? They basically, it was 3-0. There should have probably been another 5 to 10 minutes in that game. And they basically, the ref said, nope, we've seen enough. We're done.
I wrote a tweet about that. I asked, I'm not a soccer guy, but why was there no extra time? Unfortunately, I did not get a response.
They said it during the broadcast. They said because the refs have the ability to call that. It's just they never do. And so I guess if you're out there and it's really a torrential rainstorm or it is snowing really bad, they might be able to call that. So
probably also the deficit, like you guys aren't scoring 3 goals in 5 minutes.
You guys aren't. I saw them once. I started watching the second half. I saw them one time get down close to our goal, and that was it. So, and like I said, we should have actually gone out there and won that game by a lot more than we did. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Well, I'll tell you what. Let me take a break right now. I'll go a little early into the break. I want to come on back because we had Steve Simon on, was Democrat of the Day a few days ago. And I believe it was last Friday. And we had him on, the Secretary of State. And one of the things I asked him was, are you going to do this audit for Crow Wing County that they've sent up? And he says, they've asked me to do a forensic audit. I have no idea what the heck that even is. There's nothing in the process book that do a forensic audit of something. It's just you want an audit or not. And basically he's made a decision on that. I'll talk about that when I do get back. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. My legs are burning right now, man. I did my first cardio day since I had the hip replacement surgery. And if you have hip replacement surgery, just FYI, you can no longer run on the outside. You can't run on hard surfaces, and I'm going to guess that means treadmills as well. You can only run on like elliptical runners, so which is not really upsetting for me because I've been on an elliptical runner for about 15 years. So, but I went and ran today. Not bad, but my God, as I go through the afternoon here, you're going to have to carry me out to my car. You know that? Patrick's like, they don't pay me enough for this job.
Hey, can I get a raise if I'm going to be adding that to my job duties?
Speaking of giving a raise, come on, lift me up now. You need to turn me.
I need to add a badumch to the soundboard for that.
952-946-6205. It is amazing. Can I just say, I mean, I'm amazed at modern technology. And as, you know, as these this clown car on the right in this country and a few people on the left want to scream about masks are bad, vaccines are bad. Dude, medicine in this country, I have a hip replacement. They replaced my hip. They did this at the end of October. I was at the gym but before Christmas. I am now running again. It is just the beginning of February. And it's because of the top-notch medical team that I went to, the nurses, the doctors, they're all outstanding. It is the science behind this that has, you know, gotten us to the point where you can have a hip replacement surgery and pretty much be back to your normal routine fairly quickly. You know, it's some people are going to sit there and kind of pick and choose like it's an old country buffet what they want to believe on medical science. Oh, they're perfectly fine with their hip replacement, but when it comes to wearing a mask and getting a vaccine, I've done my own research. Bull crud. The only research you've done is Tucker Carlson and Google for about 5 freaking seconds. You're not fooling anyone, Dr. Bombay. Medicine is amazing, and it you should trust it. Absolutely. And this whole last year and this hip replacement, my God, what we can do. It was 100 years. Well, it wasn't even 100 years. 50 years ago. If you had a bum hip, you were stuck in a chair from that point forward. You really didn't move around that much. Not exactly with any speed. And here I am today. I'm like, oh, I ran, 16:57, which I'm pretty happy with for 2 miles. Not 1 mile. No, that's basically a light stroll. I did 16:57 for 2 miles. I had a hip replacement 3+ months ago, a little more than 3 months ago. Just amazing. And like I said, the angels, doctors, nurses, medical professionals, anyone working in a hospital, absolute freaking angels. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate all the nice things you guys, you know, especially in that last year. That was a rough year, but yeah. 952-946-6205. The Minnesota Secretary of State has flatly denied a request by the Crow Wing County Board for an audit of the 2020 election in that county, where activists had been dogging officials for months to look at unspecified claims of fraud. Convinced there was fraud to be found and egged on by people like the former president and MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell, and plus a cadre of right-wingers, a group of activists lobbied the Central Minnesota County Board for months to do more examinations of the election in the county, which Trump won by 30 points. 30 points in that election. And they think there's still fraud. Wow. After the county attorney said the board had no legal authority to audit the election, 4 of the 5 county board members passed a resolution on January 4th asking the Secretary of State's office to undertake a full forensic audit of the election material and data for the 2020 election. The resolution said the board continues to have faith in the 2020 election results as valid and reliable. It is equally troubling that there are citizens who are still have sincerely held beliefs that it was not. Because they're morons. There are morons in your community. And you basically bowed out in them. And I'll get back to this. I'm going to have a longer little bit of a rant coming up here in just a little bit. Because I'm tired of the morons getting, you know, you used to be a county board. You used to look to these people and say, you're ludicrous. Trump won by 30. What do you think that no one voted for Biden in this county? That's just insane. No, we don't need to audit this. And just because someone has a sincerely held belief that it wasn't fair and square doesn't mean it wasn't fair and square. It just means that person has been brainwashed into thinking this. And I am damn tired of giving morons equal time. You don't look at it. You don't have well, here's every, you know, space expert we ever had who said that that the sun is actually a giant, fireball out in space that we orbit around. But here is Jimmy who thinks the sun's actually made of delicious Velveeta cheese. And you don't say that's counterpoint. That's not counterpoint. That's just delusional rantings. But at the end of the day, what do? Well, we'll have to agree to disagree. No, we don't have to do that. We don't have to respect the morons. You don't. You know, it used to be a time when if you saw some guy walking on the street and he dropped his pants and started screaming about aliens, you'd say, wow, you need some mental help. Today, it's like, well, let's make him the head of the Republican Party in our county. My God. Aliens, you say? Well, we'll have to agree to disagree with the other side. Can you put your pants on? 952-946-6205. Secretary of State Steve Simon responded to the county in a letter on Monday saying that while he appreciates the delicate balancing act the county has undergone to try to address constituents' concerns, his office will not do another review of the election. Our office will not engage in a vague and impossibly broad search for unspecified misconduct based on anyone's gut feeling, hunch, or belief, no matter how sincerely held, Simon said. God, Steve Simon is just absolutely sensational. The 2020 general election, which took place almost 15 months ago, was fundamentally fair, accurate, honest, and secure across Minnesota. Crow Wing County administrators already did a thorough post-2020 election audit and post-election review and found no irregularities or cause to suspect misconduct. Simon's office reviewed the work and found it to be professional, legal, and precise. Though they've already reviewed this, and not just the county board, but the Secretary of State as well. And you know what's going to happen? Well, they're all in on it. They're all in on it. And you see, it's the second you allow the absolute morons to be respected as some sort of legitimate counterpoint, you can never now get them away. You gave them legitimacy by entertaining this drivel, for God's sakes. Those who claim to have actual evidence of potential wrongdoing should share their evidence with law enforcement agencies, Simon said. Heaven forbid, are we still doing that? It's like, I've got the evidence. Can we see it? No, I can't show it to anyone. Why not? Because then you'll see it. Yeah, that's how evidence works. Jesus. God, sometimes you run these scenarios and you look at them and you're like, how are you validating these people? Seriously, how are you doing this? They're idiots. They're idiots. But now I'm now part of the mass conspiracy. Drop trowel and start screaming about aliens, my friend. Among those pushing the audit were Ben Davis, a pastor at Remnant Ministry Center in Brainerd, who told the board he's not concerned about the results but wanted to make sure the law was being followed and fraud wasn't occurring. Did you just hear what you said? He said he was not concerned about the results but wanted to make sure the law was being followed and fraud wasn't occurring. So what fraud are you thinking happened here? That Democrats just to get you. Oh, we're going to get you. See, we're going to go all up there into Crow Wing County. Oh, yeah, and we're going to vote illegally. But here's the trick. We're all going to vote for Trump so he wins the county by 30 points. They'll never suspect a thing. Or are you saying that too many people voted for Trump? I don't know. You guys don't even know what the hell you're talking about. And you know, shame on you. Shame on you, Pastor, for you know, people look up to are supposed to look up to you wonder why pews are emptier and emptier in churches today. It's because of clowns like this guy who basically say, hey, you got to believe in politics first. The Bible, ignore all that. Ignore all the Bible unless it backs up a Republican policy. That's why people aren't going to church anymore. Simon stressed how much of the election is handled by outstanding local election administrators. And he said this on the air with us, that the real thing they're saying is not, it's not like there was an action force team that swooped in from St. Paul to take over their election. No, the election was run by Crow Wing County. So if you think there's fraud, you're basically saying the people of Crow Wing County who conducted the election were the ones who committed it. And once again, you won by 30 points there, Republicans. What are you expecting to find outside of your brains, which you clearly are missing? The local administrators do much to the hard work and running of a successful election, he wrote. So do they do so in an ethical, principled, competent, and non-political way. Yes. Simon said Minnesota had displayed election integrity and consistently posts stellar voter turnout rates. There is no legitimate reason to second-guess the integrity of the 2020 election in Crow Wing County. The county has already done its duty with great skill, and the system worked as it was designed, as the public has every right to expect. Simon said there's cause for optimism about democracy in Minnesota and America, but short-term, the nation has serious challenges, chiefly the spread of disinformation about election system. Too many people have been misled by the deceptions of those with a political or financial motive to corrode confidence in our democracy, Simon wrote. Meanwhile, foreign adversaries not only cheer our disunity, they actively encourage it by helping to spread lies about our election system through multiple channels. It's also poisonous, and it needs to stop. I believe it will stop if enough of us stand up to it. The county commissioners did not respond to a request for comment. And once again, I want to make sure that we do state that they asked for a forensic audit. And as Steve Simon said on this show, I have no idea what even that request is. We already checked the results in Crow Wing County. His own team then double-checked the results from Crow Wing County. No fraud. What the hell does the term forensic audit mean? It's just you guys are hearing buzzwords from cable news and then saying, well, everyone knows what it is. Well, he is the Secretary of State, and he has no freaking clue what the hell you're even asking him to do. I want you to give me a belch double. A what? A belch double, I said. You want me to belch twice? No, I said belch double. What are you asking me to do? I don't even want to go down that road if you want to know the truth. I really don't. But no, that's an excellent letter to the Secretary of State wrote. And the reality is we've got a really big problem, and this story highlights it. I'll get back to that in a second. Gary is in Minneapolis. Gary, thanks for holding. Welcome on into the show.
Good afternoon, Matt. Always nice to talk to you.
A pleasure, my friend.
Just got to say, you know, the Republicans, they can't quit telling us how much they help the worker means, the lower income. They're always doing stuff for us. Like, they didn't want to raise their aggressive tax they called on gasoline. Now, could that be something fishy? Because they give a lot of subsidies to an outdated system of energy subsidies to these big boys. And then now they're going to help the old people, the elderly like me. They're going to get rid of the Social Security tax. You know, of course, if over half of us don't pay a tax because just those with higher income on the outside pay the Social Security tax. So we can really thank Republicans for all the crap they give us.
Hey, Gary, two things. First of all, I love Big Boy, man. That was a great restaurant. Second of all, can I tell you, I was looking at one of the paintings you gave me, one of the pictures that you drew for me. I love that. It's in my house, and it's in my basement. I look at it. I just love that. I want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart. That was very nice that you did that for me.
Thank you, Matt. I'm going to try and get another one for you next time I see you.
That would be fantastic. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. On that, let's take a break. Come on back. I want to read one more story really quick, but then I want to get into a larger issue for the rest of this hour when I do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. One quick little other story here I want to read, and this is from The Reformer. Senate Republicans on Thursday said they plan to offer tuition reimbursement, scholarships, and recruitment bonuses to help bolster law enforcement as a profession, unveiling a $65 million proposal just days into the 2022 legislative session. Republican lawmakers have made addressing public safety and rising violent crime in the Twin Cities their top legislative priority. The Defund the Police movement, this is a quote from Jeremy Miller. It's great that a high school kid doing that. That's just amazing. The Defund the Police movement and the anti-police rhetoric has really played the negative toll on police officers and police departments, said Senate Majority Leader Jeremy Miller. Law enforcement is an honorable profession. Republicans will continue to show police officers the respect and appreciation they deserve. A few things about that. One, the problem here is the Minneapolis Police Department, because I'll pretty much guarantee you, I agree with you. Outside of that, the rest of the police departments in the state seem to be very well run. Most police officers seem to be very good. Minneapolis is a freaking nightmare. So you basically not, you know, trying to help fix that problem. Well, that kind of tells me something there. And law enforcement is an honorable profession. Yes, it is. Republicans will continue to show police officers respect or appreciation they deserve. Senate Majority Leader Jeremy Miller, have you seen the Stallings tapes? Oh, boy. Are you standing by those police officers? Do you think that that's an honorable profession when they're randomly firing rounds at people in the street and high-fiving each other when they're doing it? Do you think it's it's just really a quality police work when they roll up on someone in an unmarked vehicle unannounced and start opening fire on them? Oh, boy, oh, boy. Oh, I'm sure you'll say, it's a stressful job. They got a lot of things on their mind. Ah, like, what's a taser and what's a gun, right? Yes, exactly. Now, I want to step back because we have to. I'm begging the DFL to get their act together at this point. The other day, I saw their poll is out here. This is right after the caucuses. I think it was KSTP that said that Governor Walz is still leading all the Republican candidates, but it's only 3 points for Dr. Scott Jensen. Now, this is somewhat disturbing. Now, I could sit there, and it is KSTP. I believe it was KSTP. I can say KSTP does generally, you know, push right wing. There's a tendency, I don't know if you remember this, but in the past elections, they have to basically prevent really bad ads airing against Republicans. They've refused to air them on their stations because they say there's faults with them. There's never a fault with a Republican ad, it doesn't seem like. But Democratic ads against Republicans, there always seems to be these faults. We can't air that ad. You have to say the Republicans are just swell and everyone should vote for them. Then we'll air your ad. And that's kind of the mentality I've gotten from KSTP. But at the same time, I'll take the poll at face value. Because here's the deal. We are fighting on the left in this country for the betterment of all people. And the Republicans are like, we are too. No, you're not. No. You guys are at the point where you're banning books. You're basically trying to prevent actual history from being taught and still trying to give more and more tax breaks to the wealthiest people at the expense of everyone else. So, no, you're not there for everyone. For God's sakes, what was your stance on vaccines? Oh, that's right. Don't get vaccinated. Die to own the libs. That was what you guys were kind of pushing, right? Yeah, that's what it was. There are three major players right now we have to understand that are going to decide who runs this country in 2022. All right. First is the Republican Party. Now, I criticize the Republican Party all the time because they are horrible, seriously, just absolute garbage human beings. But they know how to focus message. They know how to hone message. When I read this story, one of the things you're going to see the daily "We Love Cops" bill, because that is what they're going to hammer home. And whether or not the Minneapolis Police Department is doing a crap job in their policing to basically try to give Republican talking points during the election, or they're just really bad at their job. It's one of the two, I think. There is a crime problem that is going on. And the Republicans, they cannot compete on any other level. They can't compete on health care. They can't compete on education. They can't compete on the environment. They can't compete on any damn thing. So they have to make this entire election about law enforcement and crime. They have to. I already guarantee you, they've already had classes on how to, if someone tries to direct you away from this, how to drive it back to crime. They're focused, they're honed. Everyone is on the same page, and they're going with it. All their media outlets in the metro area, as well as around the state, have already got the bullet points. They already know what questions they're going to ask them to basically set up their talking points and basically run with them. Yep, this is already set, and they're very good at messaging, and they're very good at hammering home. So you got to be careful of them because they're horrible. But they know how to basically discourage Democrats from getting to the polls, and encourage, and every one of their voters will be there. They could have killed off multiple members of a family. I guarantee you most of that family will still go vote Republican. Because that even so, we followed everything the Republicans said and everyone died. Damn Democrats! And that's what I've said. I've said this for years. The Republican voter can walk into their house, find their Republican politician having an affair with their wife, and the first thing out of their mouth will be, damn Democrats! Because they just do not know how to think anymore. When you go on out there, I've been out in rural Minnesota, and I'll ask these people, it's like, they say, well, the Democrats are ruining everything. I said, what are you talking about? The Democrats, your entire election officials here are far-right Republicans. Your local officials, your community officials, don't they make the laws? Well, yeah. Haven't the Republicans had a say in pretty much every law in the state? Well, yeah. So how exactly is it all the Democrats are all, it's everything's bad with the Democrats, everything is good as Republicans. They can lose their farm. They could lose their farm. Republican could come out there, rip the keys out of their hand, boot them off their own property and laugh in their face. And they'll say, damn Democrats. That's who they are. And if you don't expect that, you're going to get your cabooses handed to you. The second group is the Democrats, the DFLers. It is wildly disappointing that there isn't already attack ads hammering the crap out of the Republicans. Now, right now, for God's sakes, I have never seen so much low-hanging fruit going into an election cycle in my entire freaking life. Let me just do the first ad for you. This is one you guys can produce. I'll give it to you for free. The first shot in the ad is of a farm. You know, one of those whimsical looks at the farm community. And the voiceover starts, my family's lived here for 100 years. We voted Republican ever since I can remember. We followed the Republicans' guidance. We didn't get vaccinated. We didn't wear masks. We did not go on and social distance. We kept living our lives. We've lost 2 family members. We had 4 of us get sick. One of our children still has long COVID. And we have $300,000 worth of medical debt that we've accrued just with COVID. I will never vote Republican again. And scene. Damn, that's a good ad. That's a great ad. And that ad hits home. And you should be putting that ad together, and that ad should be airing in every small town and every community in this state right now. Don't wait until we'll start attacking October 21st. No! You have to hold the House. You have to hold the Senate. You need to pick up seats. You need to win all the state races. You do not wait. Pick your ad campaign. They still think Trump. Look at these clowns in Crow Wing County. They still think Trump won in 2020. Although there's not been one shred of evidence produced that there has been any fraud. They still think the 1-6 insurrectionists were honest heroes. My God, how many Republicans in the state can you actually take video footage from their own social media and have it over the pictures of the 1-6 insurrection beating cops on the U.S. Capitol steps and use their own words against them? My God. Healthcare. You can go around on healthcare in a lot of different ways. Education. You should have a solid attack platform on education right now, because all you have to do is say, they're the ones that don't want you to learn history. We want to actually teach you history. They want that whitewashed version of history, not real history, and they're banning books. And when it comes down to choice, for goodness sakes, they want to prevent you from having make abortion illegal in the state of Minnesota. You will have no say whatsoever. Instead, look at all the low-hanging fruit there that's easy for them to pick that could attack in any way, shape, or form. The damn DFL is doing what the damn DFL always does. And they're like, we're going to climb to the top of the tree. And I have written an 80-page, strongly worded memo on a quality transportation policy. And it's going to win the day. No, it's not. Find your cojones and start fighting. Stop. You had the head of the Republican Party chumming around with a guy who likely trafficked young children. He was on my show. Ken Mara was on my show, and he said, well, I'm not going to attack that. What? What? Dear Lord, thank God the Republicans don't have something like that to go after Democrats on. You'd have every Democrat in the state having to answer on a daily. What did you know and when did you know it? For God's sakes, act like this election matters. Instead of sitting around and pretending I'm going to outthink everybody. No, just attack them on the anti-vax stuff. We're the party of healthcare. How much in hospital bills did you accrue over the last year because of COVID? Well, we want to get a single payer system that would have cut that down to a minimum. Ta-da! Are you part of the sore losers club? The people that think Trump won in 2020? Well, we actually will go with the numbers. There hasn't been any evidence Joe Biden won. We're not sitting here trying to overthrow the democracy of the United States of America. Ta-da! Hey, we're not for banning books or burning books or basically preventing history from being taught in actual classrooms in this state. We trust teachers. We trust education. We want your kids to get a quality education, not some sort of Soviet era pick and choose. Let's change our history every 3 weeks that the Republicans want to do. Ta-da! Nope, you guys are in there. We have got this policy on egg producers. Oh, for God's sakes. You need a much better plan right now. And you had better have every Democrat ready to go for the freaking jugular. You should make it to where no Republican wants to talk crime around you guys. Because the minute they do, they'll say, oh, by the way, who won in 2020? And, oh, my God, and they run away. Instead, you're like, oh, we're going to allow them to build up this policy and make us look weak. But our egg producer policy is going to win us the day. Shut up. Fight. There is a third element here. And the third element is... Steve Simon alluded to it in the earlier story. I'll get to that in a second. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. The Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. The third element here is the media. And I think one of the things we have to come to grips with is the media is forever broken and it's not going to come back. Part of it's not their fault. Part of it is not their fault. Part of it is they were bought out by the right wing. Basically, their staffs were cut. Their investigative departments were cut. And most of them now don't know what real journalism is to save themselves. They basically just, in some cases, just print Republican talking points as actual news. They have been, you know, and that's when it's not a news outlet that's been bought by Republicans that basically push a far-right Republican narrative. But the real big problem here, which is exposed by those poll numbers I mentioned earlier, is exposed by what happened out in Crow Wing County, is that the media cannot help themselves. They have become convinced the howler monkey is competent counterpoint to actual intelligence. And because everyone slows down for a car wreck, and so they don't feel it's their responsibility to point out, oh, these people are insane. They don't. It started in 2009 when people were, where's his birth certificate? And it was a ludicrous argument, but people are like, why are you actually giving FaceTime to these people? And it got worse and worse and worse. And I brought up that thing about the idea of, you know, the scientists say, well, the it's a fiery ball in the sky. The sun is a fiery ball in the sky. And the one guy says, no, it's not. It's melted Velveeta and it's delicious. And the media today is like, well, we'll have to agree to disagree. No, it's not Velveeta. It is a fiery ball in the sky. You can actually correct that, but they don't want to do that. because they're lazy and they just, this is how they cover the freaking news today. So when you look at that poll and you say to yourself, oh, well, how in the world is Scott Jensen out there even that close to Governor Walz? Because if it was 25 years ago, Walz would be leading every Democratic candidate in this field by 30 points. Well, it's because the media today doesn't actually call out Jensen's crap. They basically allow it to go as, well, we'll have to agree to disagree. Here's the entire medical profession of this country saying vaccines work, masks work, social distance, be careful. Here's a guy saying taking a horse medication and jamming it up your backside, well, we'll have to agree to disagree. I'm not sure if he's ever said to jam it up his backside, but you can get my point. Paraphrasing. This is the problem we have in our country, and I just don't know if we're ever going to be able to fix it. Because the media, this is just what the media does. And it's only after you have stuff like January 6th where they're like, well, you know, we should have mentioned that, you know, the vice president can't do this, and, you know, it's bad to storm a Capitol. Yeah, okay. Or, hey, you know, a lot of people have died, and so, you know, just to make sure we're not sued for pushing false narrative, you know, you should get vaccinated. We're, you know, you're sure we get a lot of FaceTime and airtime to these people that are telling you not to, but you know what? You should. You have to go on out. If you're a DFL, if you're a Democrat, you have to go on out and you have to fight. Because you know what? You can no longer say, we're above it all. You're no longer above it all. This is the world that you're in. And if you're not willing to get down in the gutter and fight, well, you're going to lose. And you're going to lose badly. Okay? So get off your freaking high horse. Stop talking about pointless things. Go get the low-hanging fruit. Register 5 voters. Get them ready for Election Day. Let them know where they go vote. And for God's sakes, fight back. Or else we're all going to lose. Hour 2 is up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Matt Patrick here. And just hopefully Representative Sandra Feist is going to be joining us here. This is 41B. Which kind of the north side of town here. We'll hopefully talk with her coming up here. She's on the floor right now. I don't know if they're going to wrap up that House session, but we'll have to see. But needless to say, we will hopefully chat with her. If not, we'll get her on at some point. I guarantee it here. 952-946-6205. Yeah, if you don't give people a reason to vote for you, they won't vote for you. And you can have every policy going your way, you can have every issue going your way, but if it doesn't look like you have any conviction or you're not willing to fight in this day and age, well, you're going to end up getting destroyed. And that's just the reality of it. On that happy note, Patrick, what is your favorite Winter Olympic sport? Is it the ice hockey?
I kind of enjoy the snowboarding.
You do like the snowboarding. That Shaun White scene from last Olympics, where he was way down behind, and then his final run, he nailed everything, and he won the gold. That was pretty impressive. I remember that.
Oh, yeah, that was. Also, like, the speed skating, just kind of watching, man, these guys are, well, not just guys, but these people are incredible.
They're nuts. I mean, there's one thing. Okay, so there's the two kinds of speed skating. There's the long track, which are all the guys from the Netherlands win all those. And I didn't quite figure that one out, because I don't think they even get ice. They used to get ice in that back in, like, the 1880s. But they don't get ice there anymore, but they all love the long track speed skating, I guess. It's the short track, which is just an, I mean, that's like a drunken NASCAR race. And it's just brilliant because it's who can survive. I mean, that's really, it's the Royal Rumble of Olympic sports. They've already actually started to air them. I watched a little curling action yesterday. That was entertaining. On one of the networks, they had some of the downhill. I will say, wherever this is at in China, they're showing some of the panoramic scenes from the top of the ski as they went down on what looks to be a fairly tough course. If I was to go down that course, I think I'd made it about one turn and then you would have found me in a rock. But it was they're just stunning beauty up there. I mean, the views from the top of this mountain are just absolutely gorgeous, although I don't think anyone that's flying down there is really paying attention to the scenery. That's for sure. The women's hockey team got into action today. They beat Finland, but we lost one of our good players. I don't know if you saw that. She had to be carted off the ice.
Oh, that's not good. Yeah, I did not see the recap of the game yet.
Here's what I was enjoying with the games in Tokyo, and I'm going to enjoy, I think, with the games in China, is that we'll actually have events the first thing in the morning. And they've actually, you know, they do try to kind of make sure that the local, that if the United States is playing in something, they're playing in a time when people can see it. They generally don't like to kind of, you know, prevent people from doing or having things in the middle of the night. Unless it's like during the regular Olympics, there's like fencing and like judo and stuff like that. They'd have the finals in the middle of the night. But when it came to stuff that was a little more popular, they kind of had to make sure the finals were in a time where the United States could watch them live. You can watch the stuff in the morning up until I think they're starting events even at like 7 a.m., 8 a.m. in the morning. Or then it starts it back up again at 4 in the afternoon, 5 in the afternoon. So, you know, tonight you'll be – they'll actually – some of the Olympic networks will actually have some of the Olympic coverage out there, I'm guessing, of some of the stuff. The opening ceremony is tomorrow, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I'm sure that the Chinese – the last time they did it when they did it in Beijing, it was pretty spectacular. But when you have forced labor, it makes for a heck of a show, doesn't it? I will also I love the bobsled because those – they occasionally just have – when the guys are upside down and going and they're just kind of skidding down the trail, you know something's wrong. And things have gone bad there. Figure skating? Are we supposed to do good in figure skating? That's the gymnastics of the Winter Olympics. Do we have any really good figure skaters on the team, in the competition? Or are we going to get destroyed by the Russians again? Are the Canadians?
I couldn't answer that, unfortunately.
I know you're a big fan of the figure skating, so I become a big fan of all the sports. If you want to know the truth, I do. I just love it. The Olympics, I'm cool with it. I'm cool with it. USA. It was like yesterday. We're watching the United States team in soccer get ready. Hopefully, they put themselves in a really good position to make the World Cup this year. And they're beating up on Honduras. And yeah, USA, USA. And that's very enjoyable. I remember when we all used to chant that together. And it used to be it was a good thing. We just don't get to do that much anymore, and that's why I guess I like the Olympics. It reminds me that we're all of one country, and yeah, you can think some things, and you know you're crazy, but at the same time, you know we're supposed to be all in this together, and that's maybe the good reminder that the Olympics put forward there. So, yeah, I'm going to be I'll be talking a lot about that over the next 2 weeks. All right, just get used to it, get past the Super Bowl. We'll be talking about it some more there. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's quickly do a few stories here in the Minnesota coronavirus update for today. COVID update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 5,480 newly reported cases, 45 newly reported deaths. That's another high day on the death count. Sadly, I mean, any day where's the death count, it's just not – it's sad. But, yeah, we've had close to – I think it's maybe 100 deaths in the last 2 days. State COVID-19 death toll now is 11,561. Today's update includes the case data that was reported in the 24-hour period ending at 4 a.m. on Wednesday. Minnesota's test positivity rate in the 7-day rolling average is down to 20.0. It had been as high as 23.7 on January 21st. Anything over 10 puts Minnesota in the high-risk threshold. It is coming down, which is very good news for all of us at this point because, it was kind of to a point getting into that incredibly scary level. While COVID-19 cases are starting to trend down, COVID-19 continues to circulate widely in Minnesota. We urge Minnesotans to keep taking steps to slow the spread. Stay home if you're sick with even mild symptoms. Get vaccinated and boosted when you're eligible. Wear a well-fitting mask. Get tested when needed. Avoid crowds and wash your hands often. You know, I had it. I've been vaccinated. I've been boosted. I had it. I am basically, as my doctor said to me last week, you basically are the gold standard of immunity for it right now. I went running today. I wore a mask the entire time I was in the Y. I wear a mask when I went grocery shopping this morning. I wore a mask the entire time. So, you know, I still am, you know, being careful out there. I don't do a lot of, you know, outdoor things. You know, I don't know. The outdoor stuff, the cold weather does help, you know, kind of prevent the spread, I think, a little bit. But I'm not going to, like, sporting events indoors or a lot of indoor stuff right now. And I'm okay with that because I care about everyone else. I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick. And I don't want you, you know with a lifetime of medical debt. So through February 1st, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 1,350. That's down from 1,366 reported on February 1st. Of those hospitalized, 193 people are in intensive care. That's down from 204. That's good. And 1,157 are in non-ICU care. That's down from 1,162. ICU COVID admission rose to 374 on December 16th. So the fact we are down from 374 to 193, that's very good. We still have a long way to go, though. I wanted to get that back. You know, reminder, we had very minimal numbers in early spring when it came to this stuff. And granted, it's not necessarily because people didn't get vaccinated. We had the Omicron variant, but you need to get vaccinated. You need to wear a mask. That's, you know, because you don't know when the next variant's coming. The latest hospital capacity data shows there are 44 staffed adult ICU beds available in the entire state, down from 46 on February 1st. 19 pediatric ICU beds available, which is even from February 1st. As of February 1st, the state reported that 3,847,494 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, while 3,603,520 people have completed the vaccine series. The state has administered 2,055,961 third dose booster shots. The total amount of cases in the state of Minnesota, 1,352,488. We have a long way to go. We have a long way to go. And we still have a 20% test positivity rate. I hope this downward trend continues. There's a new variant out there that's a little concerning, but I hope we can continue this same trend of downward cases, downward ICU visits, and that would be good. I think that would be good. Elected officials in Minneapolis have joined the growing chorus demanding the city release body cam footage of Wednesday's fatal police shooting. This is not going to go well. I think the fact there already are some questions involved with this. I think they if they've got body cam footage, they got to release it. Minneapolis Police Department can and must release the body cam footage, wrote Ward 2 council member Robin Worlbaugh, Wednesday morning, referring to the SWAT officer's fatal shooting of Amir Locke in a downtown apartment building on February 2nd. Locke, a young black man, was shot and killed by a member of the Minneapolis Police Department SWAT team around 6:48 a.m. that day. A Minneapolis Police Department statement said the SWAT team was serving a search warrant stemming from a St. Paul police homicide investigation when members entered an apartment in the Bolero Flats building and encountered Locke. About 9 seconds after they entered, one officer, identified as Mark Hanneman, fired his gun, fatally striking Locke, according to police. Minneapolis Police Department said Locke was holding a gun when he was shot. Now, there has been a report, and I have not seen if this has been confirmed or not, that Locke actually was registered with this gun, and he actually had a carry and conceal permit with this gun. And if he was in his own house, so let me get this right. If all that is true, a SWAT team member opened fire 9 seconds after they busted the door down on a person in their own house, possibly, maybe their own house. I'm not sure if Locke lived at this place necessarily, but a person that was legally able to carry that gun. He was legally able to carry the gun and got shot 9 seconds into the raid and was killed. If that is true, if he had a legitimate carry and conceal permit, ugh. 30 hours later, the police department in the city have provided very few other details of the shooting. Jason Chavez, who represents Ward 9, also called for the immediate release of the body cam footage on Wednesday, saying he expects full transparency from the law enforcement agencies involved. And members of the Minneapolis delegation of the state legislature sent a letter to Mayor Fry and the police department urging body cam footage be released immediately. Here's my I posted this last night. I stand by this. Here's your gauge. If the Minneapolis Police Department is very quick to release the footage will show that they did everything by the book and that this was a justifiable shooting. That's generally how it works. And it's not just here. It's pretty much any time there's a question about a police shooting, that is the standard. They'll quickly say, oh, well, here's the, we did everything by the book. We told them to drop the weapon and didn't do it, and there you go. Releasing the body cam footage of this event, allowing the public to see actions of both officers and Mr. Locke is essential, the letter said. The lawmakers also asked for a timeline and rationale if the footage wouldn't be published right away. Bringing the News reached out on Thursday morning to the mayor's office asking the release of the body cam footage, but has not received a response. What has the city and the police department revealed at this point? Interim Minneapolis Police Chief Amelia Huffman acknowledged body cam footage exists, saying Wednesday she has reviewed the video of the incident. She said they could potentially release video or images during the investigations. That's not exactly a full-throated endorsement, is it? The department that afternoon of the shooting released two photos of a handgun in a cardboard box, alleging this weapon Locke was holding. Civil rights lawyer and racial justice activist Nikki Levi Armstrong, who's been on the show, has since said Locke was a licensed gun owner with a carry and conceal permit. So you putting out, and this is interesting. Isn't this the kind of interesting thing? Because if you are a Republican who thinks that carry and conceal is a wonderful thing and that's it's all good and wonderful, then why is the gun being vilified here? Because the gun was legal. And let's just be honest about it. The police released this then to basically say, not because the gun was inflammatory, but it was the black guy with the gun, which is the inflammatory thing. And so they're kind of, you can see they're kind of starting to try to drive a narrative. But if he had the right to carry the gun and he was in an apartment he was supposed to be in, what law did he break by having the gun in his hand? Unless, hey, if the police said, you know, they had 9 seconds, drop the weapon, drop the weapon, drop the weapon, bang. I don't know. Maybe if we saw the body cam footage. The city has posted those photos as well as redacted incident reports detailed on a webpage dedicated to the police shooting. I'm sorry, Minneapolis Police Department, incident reports are generally full of crap. Let me refer back once again to the Stallings videos, which shows that all the police reports associated with that incident were lying their asses off. Fry on Wednesday said truth and transparency would serve as the guiding principles of the pro. Well, then release the body cam video. As of 1 p.m. Thursday, city and police leaders have said little else. Both the Minneapolis and St. Paul police departments have declined to provide a copy of the search warrant. Authorities say they were being executed at the apartment in which Locke was killed. So was the questions remain on whether Locke was even the individual named in the search warrant. Star Tribune says that he was not. The Star Tribune has reported that Locke wasn't the person that was listed on the... So wait a second here. So there's a chance that Locke wasn't the guy listed on the search warrant. Was in possibly in his own apartment with a legally registered weapon that he had the right to carry and conceal and was shot by a cop entering his apartment as he held the gun that he legally owned. Or as Minneapolis police calls it, case closed. Wow. City leaders have also not said whether the SWAT team executed a no-knock warrant, use of which has been restricted since November of 2020. Well, we have the body cam footage, so we should be able to see if they did that. My guess is, since we haven't seen it, they did. They did the no-knock. Nor have they provided a timeline or plan or if the body cam footage might be released to the public. Minneapolis has a long path before us in establishing a trusting, effective, and professional relationship with its police department and the community, the state lawmakers wrote. Increasing transparency around this tragic situation will be an important step in this journey. We urge you to think creatively with the current laws and release the footage. I'll tell you what, take a break. Come on back. Let me share a few more thoughts on this when I do return. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. All right, so here we are yet once again. We have some questions. Was this person the person listed on the search warrant? Doesn't sound like he was. You would think that the individuals who are about to raid a house would know what the person on the search warrant looked like. They wouldn't just be, black guy! You would think. You would think that there'd be like some planning ahead of time that here's the image of the individual we are looking for. So, you know, if Locke wasn't the guy that they were looking for, how was he shot? If he was in his own place with a legal weapon, which you should have been known if he had that legal weapon, how was he shot? Was there a no-knock warrant administered here, which you're not supposed to do? And the reality is, was he really threatening them? Or was it, black guy with a gun, shoot, shoot, shoot? I mean, that's kind of what the way that things have gone in Minneapolis. You got to release the body cam footage. I don't care who you are. You have, considering what this city has gone through. George Floyd, for God's sakes. George Floyd, we saw what they did. They all lied on the reports. They misrepresented what they said, what was going on. They sent out their immediate attack goons to basically go out there and gangbanger, drug user, bah, he was going to kill 50 people. Thank God we murdered him in the street. That's kind of what the way they do things in Minneapolis. The Stallings case, for God's sakes, the Stallings case is just 1,000 pounds of ugly, and I want to remind everyone out there, not a single officer, to my knowledge, has been punished at all for what happened on those videos. And as a matter of fact, as they were trying to throw that guy in jail wrongly, they were still fighting tooth and nail to prevent those videos from being released. A year and a half after the incident. Unbelievable. And here we have yet another shooting. And we have body cam footage. It's not like the shooting in Uptown where, you know, supposedly no video footage existed. We already have acknowledgement there is video footage, I'm going to guess, of the entire incident. From whether or not they did a no-knock warrant, what Locke was doing, was he being safe, did he say anything to the police department saying, hey, I got a legal gun here, who are you people, why are you in my house? And can I even go as far? I mean, I know this is speculation, but until I know what the hell's going on, did you have the right apartment? Dear Lord, how many times have you heard that? Police kicking in someone's door, opening fire on people in a house and then saying, oh, sorry, our bad, no blood, no foul. Well, blood, but, you know, no foul. We'll see ourselves out. We mean to go and raid the next door neighbors. Our bad. You only hope that that wasn't the case. You have forfeited the ability for us to trust you. Minneapolis Police Department, and this does not apply to the St. Paul Police Department, doesn't apply to the suburban police departments. It doesn't. It just applies to the Minneapolis Police Department. You guys have done such a bad job at showing the public what the hell's been going on there. When the public is directly affected by your actions, that no, we don't trust you. And that's just the reality of it. And it's not us, it's you. You're the abusive member of this relationship. It's not the people of Minneapolis. It's the police. You're the abuser. So if you want to show us that you're with your new interim chief, you're playing with a new deck of cards, that things are going to change. Well, this is easy. Release the body cam footage. Release it all from beginning to end. Let us see what happened, and we'll go from there. If this is a case where all you're doing is you're trying to, well, we got to get this guy out. We're going to let him retire early. He's going to transfer. He's gone. We can't really hold him accountable. Or is this a case where you have him dead to rights committing a crime on tape, and so now you're giving him time to basically get all the money out of his name and into his wife's name or a family member's name so he has nothing that can lose in a civil trial, and then you'll, now we've got some serious news. Now that he's shielded himself so where he's going to have, his family will have money, now we're going to let you know he committed a crime. Is that what's going on? I can't trust you. No one in the city can trust you because of your track record. You're an abusive relationship, and you right now are not showing me the things we need to see to show that you're changed your ways. I mean, I already can see it. It's going to be what? It's going to be a court order. It's going to be in what, 2 years, you're going to say, well, here's the video footage. But I mean, hey, guys. Before people get upset and, you know, get upset and angry, I want everyone to let calmer minds prevail. And now here it is. Oh, yeah, there was lots of crimes committed, but he's retired and he's gone and I can't hold him accountable. And even if you did, he doesn't have any money that's available for the people that will have to civil. Oh, my God. How many times indeed? 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Hopefully, Democrat of the Day, Sandra Feist, when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, is the Matt McNeil Show. I think I'm the one that coined Let's Get Feisty. Representative Sandra Feist is kind enough to join us. 41B is the district. I believe, off the top of my head, is it St. Anthony, Columbia Heights, New Brighton, and Hilltop? Is that correct, Representative?
That is correct.
Dang, sometimes I'm good at this. Yeah. Welcome to the show. Of course, we had you on Democrat of the Day 2 years ago. Glad to have you back. How are things going for you?
Things are good. I was excited to come back because when you first interviewed me, I didn't have any accomplishments and I had all sorts of talking points and opinions and perspectives, but now I can actually tell you what I've been up to.
Well, it was an absolute delight. I remember when you were running your campaign and I just said, we got to get you into St. Paul. I mean, you are, first of all, probably the coolest representative up there. I'm dead serious about that. But as well, you had some great points here. So let's actually refresh ourselves. You had a year there. What do you feel? Let's talk a little bit about your accomplishments in the first year there in St. Paul.
Yeah. Well, I was able to author 5 bills that were passed into law, which I'm very proud of. And those include several bills that I feel like, having been there, I made a difference that if another person had been there, it might not have happened. So one of those bills that I carried was called the Veterans Restorative Justice Act. And that bill created a pathway for veterans charged with certain low-level offenses that were directly related to a service-related trauma or injury to, instead of receive punitive sentencing, receive a restorative sentencing path. So they receive treatment for things like PTSD, addiction, domestic violence, interventions. And so I'm really proud of that. I think it's a really important bill that will support our veterans and their families.
Well, and as, if I can add, I'm a veteran, U.S. Army. And the, you know, I think what I really like about that, there are sometimes there is a story there. There's a, you know, what happened? You have a veteran, the PTSD. I saw it firsthand with veterans. And you see it. You go to the VA, you see the people over there that are dealing with the PTSD. And, you know, sometimes bad things happen. And I think you have to take that into account, that they're sometimes just locking someone up in a jail is not the option, that getting them the treatment they need and helping them get on a better path of correction is the way to go. And I commend you on that. That's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. And I would go so far as to say is locking someone up is almost never the right answer. Mm-hmm. If we want to truly help people achieve their full potential and get on the right path, and if we want to protect public safety, then I think that we need to expand restorative justice to most types of sentencing.
Absolutely. Let's talk, what are some of the other bills that you got passed this last session?
Yeah, I authored a bill around something called the U visa certification process. That's for immigrant victims of serious crimes. And I'm an immigration attorney. And so I knew that there was this huge issue where the process requires law enforcement to be involved. And sometimes the public safety departments didn't really know what they were looking at. And so they would just ignore the requests for the certification. And so I worked with law enforcement domestic violence advocates. Was able to get this bill passed. It requires consistent timelines for turnaround. So when law enforcement receives a request to, you know, confirm that the victim worked with them to investigate or prosecute the crime, they must respond now within 90 days or 14 days if the immigrant is in removal proceedings. And I was able to do that with bipartisan support, working alongside many stakeholders. And I'm really proud. I feel like it took an immigration attorney's understanding of what this bill did and how the visa process works to build that coalition.
Do you?
And I know every day it helps people because I see it on my listserv of immigration lawyers.
You know, I talked to Senator John Hoffman the other day, and he talked about how, you know, sometimes you just have to sit down and talk with him. With your experience, I mean, talk a little bit about that. I imagine there were some Republicans who were like, no, no, no. It's like, let me explain what my experience is and why this is an important thing. Did you have conversations like that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I actually had a lot of them, which I think was really important. When I first presented the bill, it was passed to the next committee down party lines. By the time I presented it in Judiciary, which was our final stop, it passed with unanimous support. And I was able to explain, you know, this is something that protects public safety. It allows police departments to protect immigrant communities, to investigate crime in all of our communities. And it was able to also address concerns that we were expanding rights under immigration laws at the state level, which was not what we were doing. And those conversations were really open and candid and positive. And it was very affirming for me to work across the aisle like that on a bill that could have been pretty contentious and was not.
You are part of the Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform Finance Policy Committee as well.
Yeah.
So I imagine that gave you also the springboard to be able to bring, in this case, in both of those bills, a good perspective to bring it into realization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I kind of say that I've divided myself into my two halves. As a mom, I care a lot about education and addressing the opportunity gap. And so two of my committees are in that realm. And then my other two committees are in the public safety and judiciary realm. So I'm trying to look at criminal legal reform and protecting public safety. And so, those are kind of the two spheres that I function in.
Success on the judicial side. Were there any bills you were working on the education side?
Yes. I authored a bill to expand funding around suicide prevention training in schools. That is a critically important issue. We actually just today in our education finance committee, we heard presentations by the Department of Education and NAMI talking about the urgent need for interventions and support around student mental health and teacher mental health. And so I was really very pleased that we were able to expand that funding last session. It definitely came at a very important time.
And it is. And I think that, you know, and boy, especially in the last 2 years with what these kids have gone through, and everyone, teachers, kids, parents, the academics during a age of pandemic is not easy. Having better mental health programs available for the educators, the administrators, for the kids, for the parents, that is such an important thing that we need to make sure we're putting more money into. As a matter of fact, I can make an argument there's like four or five things we could do immediately that would be a very big boon, because this is something, it's not just inner city kids, it's not just rural kids, it's every kid across the state.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. And as a mom, my kids are in fourth and sixth grade. I see it in my own home. Mm. This is so urgent. And the Department of Education really brought home how the unmet mental health needs are impacting students' ability to truly succeed in their academics. So it's all intertwined.
We are looking at a new session here as we get into play here. Of course, you've got to deal with the Republican Senate, but you do have the governor on your side here. What are the things that you're looking for? I mean, you got some great accomplishments, man, some fantastic accomplishments, if I might say, in your first year. What are some of
Thank
the things
you.
That you're looking at in the second year as priorities for you to come out as far as bills and as legislation you're working on?
Yeah. So I've got kind of short-term and long-term goals. I have a number of bipartisan bills that I hope to pass this year. One of them is the Student Data Privacy Act. And that would bring our student data privacy laws from the 1970s, when student data was information on a piece of paper in a locked filing cabinet, into the 21st century, when data is in the cloud, it's in the hands of private for-profit companies, and it's in school-issued devices being remotely monitored by schools when students are not in school. And so there's a lot of things that we just need to update our framework to address in terms of how student data is handled. And that issue is bipartisan, and it also has really significant equity aspects to it. We found that when schools use algorithm-based keyword monitoring software, that results in disproportionate disciplinary action against students of color and low-income students. We've also seen that those types of intervention, when they see keywords that imply that there might be a mental health concern, that actually has been proven to undermine student trust in the school and have a negative impact on student mental well-being. And so we're just trying to address this. It's become an incredibly pervasive issue because of COVID and the amount of distance learning students are doing. And this bill has been around for a while, and this is an issue that finally the public is paying attention to, and we've got a bill. Mm-hmm. I introduced it last year, and it's a really important bill. We would be the first in the nation to pass something like it, and it's a priority for me this year.
All right. What about, I mean, and if I can ask, and obviously sometimes mm-hmm. I ask this question, and some people say, well, you heard what I'm doing. I'm doing it for all students, including in my district. But mm-hmm. is there anything specific for 41B that you're saying, you know what, this is, you know, I was talking to the people that are down in Burnsville, and obviously the Burnsville Center, you know, not a lot of people down there, not a lot of businesses in there working on trying to do some business incentive things. Is there anything mm-hmm. in 41B that you're looking around and you're saying, you know what, this needs to be addressed immediately?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, so also in the student realm, I authored a bill around what's called period poverty. So students came to me and they said that we have a problem where students are being charged for menstrual products at school. And we know that period poverty actually leads to students missing on average about a week of school per year, and that absenteeism directly impacts their ability to succeed in school. And one of my constituents, a student at Columbia Heights High School, told me that when she needed a menstrual product, they actually charged her 25 cents and she didn't have it on her. And they just added her name to a list of kids who were in debt to the school. And she was able to address that at her school, but wanted to advocate for all students across Minnesota having that same access. We have a really awesome student-led movement around this bill that would require schools to provide menstrual products in student bathrooms for grades 4 through 12. And it is funded, because I don't believe in unfunded mandates.
Well, it's a shame you have to, because I can say this. My God, how many school districts have free water bottles when the football game's on? Or,
or toilet paper.
Exactly.
Right?
This is a basic health thing. And,
exactly.
Can I also make the point for, I imagine the staff around this is not exactly eager to have this conversation of, do you have any money on you mm-hmm. at this point?
Mm-hmm.
So this is just bad education policy on that local level. This is mm-hmm. a case where, mm-hmm. you know, this is a no-brainer, because I guess this is still the world we live in today, this is not being taken care of. How in the hell? All right. Well, good for you.
When I tell people, they're like, what? Like, that's not something that's already provided. Basic needs not being met, 50% of the students here in Minnesota. So we're going to address it this year.
Well, that's a good thing. I will bring up one thing here that's, it's going to be interesting. Clearly, the Republican and their strategy this upcoming election cycle is going to be crime, crime, crime. And they mm-hmm. put out a bill about, funding scholarships, basically, by the looks of it, almost making police education free in the state for police mm-hmm. officers, which, heaven forbid you do that for everyone in this state. But, okay, fine.
Yeah.
This is really going to be their point. It's kind of one of those things where are you seeing the Republicans push particularly where do you see, where the House is going to go in regards to public safety policy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I've definitely, every once in a while, I get looped into Republican Twitter because I get, like, tagged by this Crime Watch hashtag or something. Mm-hmm. And they definitely are just hammering home, we need to get the bad guys and put more people in jail. We need to prosecute more harshly. So that's definitely the drum that they are beating. On the DFL side, you know, what we're looking at is a more holistic approach to public safety, one that invests in sustainable community-based violence prevention programs. So on our very first day of the Public Safety Committee hearing, we had a really good discussion of the first portion of a bill around innovating public safety that Representative Cedric Frazier introduced. And an expert, Professor Patrick Sharkey from Princeton, came and testified. And I tweeted this because I was like, oh, my God, everyone needs to hear this. Like, there is no data that says incarcerating more people makes us safer. And so we need to be looking at other ways to protect public safety.
Representative,
like,
if
follow
I
follow the data.
Representative, if I may make the point, as I've been watching the Republican Party, and this is me saying this, this is not you. It has mm-hmm. nothing to do with crime. It has to do with who they're locking up. And that is kind of what the unsaid thing that's going on here. It's about who they're going after. Because if you're really against crime, trust me, rural Minnesota right now, there are meth labs all over the place. Meth is a really, truly epidemic crisis in rural Minnesota. They don't talk about that. They don't seem to care about that. They can't stop talking about North Minneapolis. Gee, I wonder why. So that's me saying it. If I can bring in Republicans and where they're coming after, you're on the education policy. You know, it's clear there's three things here Republicans want to do. One, they want to start teaching the whitewashed version of American history as actual history. They want, you know, and we've seen in other states the banning of books, and there have already been some Republicans in the state saying some books should be removed from school shelves. But as well, also the movement towards basically gutting all public school funding and giving it to a handful of private business owners who run charter schools and private schools. So I imagine all three of those are going to be no-goes for you in the House Education Committees, right?
Yeah, not so much. That's the nice thing about having the gavel is that we don't have to hear those bills. So, you know, I feel for my colleagues in the Senate who have to sit through hearings on these types of efforts because they are really distressing and depressing. As a former ACLU board member, it just hurts my heart to hear about banning books.
Yeah.
And limiting the ways like they are in Texas that teachers can even teach history. It's all profoundly sad. I actually taught sixth grade civics all day recently at my son's middle school, and it was just a joy. And they had me set up in the library. And so in between classes, I was just looking through the books that they're reading, and they just really are surrounded, at least here in the Mountains View School District, which is where my kids go, by a wealth of perspectives and just a lot of thought-provoking information that can help them to really learn about the world around them in a way that will make them good human beings and good leaders when they grow up.
Representative Sandra Feist, I really like you. I really like you. I want you in St. Paul for a long time to come.
Thank you.
41B is the district. You're hearing this. This is just quality leadership. And this is when I was talking last hour about, you know, fighting back with Republicans and punching back on these things. Sandra Feist, she does that as a House rep, and we need to have more of that. So this is a no-brainer. Help her get back into St. Paul for another term. What is the website for people to go to if they would like to find out how they can donate and volunteer, help out your campaign?
Yep, my website is feistforhouse.org.
Feist for House, FeistForHouse.org, correct?
Correct. Thank you.
I'll link to everything on social media a little bit later on. Representative, an absolute privilege. Come back anytime. By all means, come back anytime. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to be paying attention to some of these bills that we were talking about. If they do get passed, I'm calling you. We're going to have you on. We'll have a nice little celebration about good things happening in St. Paul, okay?
Awesome. Awesome. I have several bipartisan bills that I'm really hopeful for and cautiously optimistic for, so I look forward to that conversation.
Absolutely. Representative Sandra Feist, let's get feisty. That's what I'll say it again. 41B. Help her out if you can. Feistforhouse.org. We'll take a break, wrap up the show when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. God, I love Sandra Feist. What a great representative. You know, and tomorrow, as a matter of fact, I get my representative here, Cheryl Youakim. She's Democrat of the Day tomorrow. We'll have an interview with Brett. I might even have Dr. Joe Eastman in with us. He couldn't join us today because he's trying to recover from a little bit of a medical procedure, but he should be available tomorrow. We might do some modeling. Another three interview day. That's me mailing it in. That's me. I don't work those days. I love those days. So an absolute privilege. We'll have the spotlight on the Sandra Feist interview coming in here. Good news, I think. Powerful boats used for the burgeoning sport of wake surfing create wakes large enough that people can ride them without a tow rope. But the strength and height of those waves has also made a sport controversial, drawing complaints from people who say their crashing force can damage property and lake habitat, pester other boaters, and even knock people off docks. Now the University of Minnesota has waded into the fierce debate over regulating sport by measuring just how large waves are from these wakes on these wake boats. New research from the University of Minnesota suggests wake surf boards would need to run at least twice as far from shorelines, docks, and other lakegoers for their waves to have the same impact as other common recreational boats used for sports like tubing, water skiing, and wakeboarding. The study is likely to inform legislative efforts to control the sport and also raise more questions about the impact of wake surfing on shorelines and aquatic habitat. I can tell you right now, I have been on these lakes with these wakeboarders. They're not twice the distance from the shoreline. They're right by the shoreline because at the end of the day, one of the things wakeboarding boats love, they love the big waves crashing into people's docks and other people's boats. They make a huge wave. I was out on a fishing boat in a northern lake, and we had a wake surfing boat, came by. Swear to God, it was like I was like on Lake of the Woods. You're just up and down and up and down as, you know, some drunken idiots are, me make big wave. Yeah, it's like, geez. 2 years ago, I could have looked out and said, wow, that's a mighty big wave that just came off that boat, but I couldn't tell you how big it is, said Jeff Marr, the Associate Director of Engineering and Facilities at the UC St. Anthony Falls Laboratory, who helped lead the research. We can now talk about how big they are. Currently, there are no state regulations specific to wake surfing, and the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources has only a recommendation that motorboats stay at least 200 feet from shore. Yeah, your recommendations. Personal responsibility. It doesn't really work. Boats that create an artificial wake may require more distance and lower the impact. 2 years ago, state lawmakers debated whether to require wake-surfing boats to stay 200 feet from the shore, docks, and other watercraft. The legislation was supported by the boating industry, which has run promotional campaigns on conscious wake-surfing. But the idea drew backlash from some lake association, environmental groups, and others who said 200 feet wasn't enough to protect habitat and people from dangerous or damaging waves. Large wakes can be lead to shoreline erosion and impaired water quality, according to the DNR. House DFLer briefly pushed for a 100,000-foot buffer, a distance that would effectively bar the sport from many lakes in Minnesota, and some lake associations to try to ban the wakeboarders boats entirely from their local waters. A 2020 Minnesota survey of nearly 3,000 recreational boaters found 58% of the respondents believe high wakes or wake surfing are the most common problem they find in water. Yeah, go out to Minnetonka. That lake is not fun anymore. It isn't. It's knuckleheads doing these big waves. It's jet skiers that are flying around, and yeah. It's if you want an enjoyable lake, it's fine. You want to have that, it's fine. Go to Lake Superior. Go to Lake of the Woods. Go one of the big lakes. Don't go out there in a small lake and basically destroy everyone else's experience because you're kind of a jackass. That's just me, though. Have a good one. Native Roots Radio up next. Till tomorrow. See ya.